Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Friday, October the 14th, and welcome to our commentary. It's a beautiful day here in North Texas, by the way, just absolutely beautiful day. So if you have any plans for the week, looks like you're going to get a pretty good, some pretty good temperatures to go outside and visit parks or whatever, go out for a walk or go out, do something with your family. It'll be a beautiful weekend here in the North Texas area. Let me begin today by talking about the January 6th committee. The January 6th committee just had a meeting, I guess, a couple of days ago. They're talking about issuing a subpoena for former President Trump. That's never going to happen. And the reason it's never going to happen is because the January 6th committee is about, and that is when the Republicans take over the Congress, the committee will change and the committee maybe, hopefully, we'll focus on understanding what actually happened on January the 6th rather than engaging in all of this political witch hunt. It's interesting today that there was a column in the Washington Post and in the New York Times, not exactly right-wing newspapers, where you had a couple of columnists who were very disappointed with the January 6th committee, basically saying that it just became political. The number one problem, and now this is my opinion, the number one problem with the January 6th committee was the lack of cross-examination, the lack of looking at the issues from both sides. That is so un-American. You know, one of the great traditions of justice in the United States is that you have a trial and the accused has the opportunity to defend himself or herself, and you have a lawyer representing you, and that attorney participates in the selection of the jury. That did not happen here. That none of that happened here. And that's why you had that story a few months ago of the young woman who showed up at the committee saying that somebody told somebody who told somebody who told somebody that President Trump tried to take the steering wheel away from one of the secret agents. I mean, look, anybody with any common sense knows that, first of all, the presidential car, there's a window that separates the driver from the president. The reason for that window is the security of the president. Obviously, you have to protect him against a bullet or something else. So that window, there's no human in this planet who's going to be able to break that window and grab the steering wheel. And the other thing, too, and more important than that, is that the Secret Service would not confirm the story. So the Secret Service said it didn't happen, and they were willing to speak under oath. So that, I think, killed the credibility of the committee. It didn't have a lot before, but that killed it completely. So this committee, as those articles in the New York Times and the Washington Post today are saying, became very political. It became basically a committee for, if you hate Trump, you love the committee. If you hate Trump, you love the committee. If you're like me and you're interested in finding out what actually happened that day, you're not watching. And the overwhelming majority of the American people, you know what they're doing? They're talking about the price of food, because the price of food just went up 13% over the last 12 months. And that's what Americans are talking about, not the January 6th committee. So I think we can say goodbye to the January 6th committee. Nothing is going to happen. Nothing is going to happen. Now, I hope when the Republicans take over that they change the committee and that they actually do an investigation of what happened that day. And my biggest question is, why wasn't the Capitol defended? How do you expose the Capitol of the United States, the Congress of the United States? How do you like that? That's the question I have, because somebody dropped the ball. Somebody dropped the ball. There should have been plenty of National Guard or officers or whatever around that Capitol. Had there been that, the incident would have never happened. They would have never been able to go inside the Capitol. Maybe some would have tried, but they would have met some pretty stiff resistance. They didn't have that on January the 6th. So that's the real question for me. Why wasn't the Capitol defended? That's what I want to find out. Why wasn't the Capitol defended? Well, I have a post over at the American Thinker today, Friday, talking about President Biden and Jake Tapper of CNN. As you may know, I think I mentioned it on Thursday, that President Biden was a guest on Jake Tapper's primetime program on CNN. He was, I guess, recently moved to primetime, so he had President Biden as his guest. Now, normally when the President of the United States speaks on primetime, interview on primetime, he's going to get a pretty good audience. The nature of the beast, you know, if you're the president, you're going to get a good audience. The audience for President Biden was 834,000 people, according to the, you know, the people who keep track of these things. So less than a million Americans wanted to listen to what the President of the United States had to say. Now, I think that bad audience is a reflection of two things. Number one, Biden has pretty much gotten disconnected from the country. The country's not tuned in to President Biden. I think most people have lost confidence in him, and they just don't pay attention to what he's saying. But the other big issue is what's happening to CNN, and especially to Jake Tapper. Look, Jake Tapper, if CNN was a baseball team, they would release Jake Tapper and bring in a fresh face. And that's what CNN has to do. If they want to regain whatever credibility they used to have, and they used to be at one time a very credible news organization, they were actually very good. If some of you remember going back to the days of the first Gulf War, or even the Iraq War, the second one, they were a very credible place to go for news. Not anymore, because they went crazy with Trump and they destroyed the credibility. So what they have to do is they need to blow up the newsroom and hire some new faces and then focus on news. And maybe that'll put him back. That'll put him back on the map. Well, if you watch Spanish television, then you'll catch my interview with Telemundo. It will appear on Sunday here in the Dallas area, and I'll try to put up the link when I get it. It usually takes a couple of days for the link to happen. But I was asked. We were talking about Governor Abbott, and one of the questions that came up was Governor Abbott and the Hispanic vote. Well, Governor Abbott continues to say in his interviews that he will get 50% of the Hispanic vote, and I think he's got a very good chance at that. And let me tell you why. The last two times that he ran, 2014 and 2018, remember that Governor Abbott is running for his third term as governor. The last two times that he ran, he got like in the mid-40s, 44, 45, something like that. So he starts off with a pretty good base. In the mid-40s, I mean. And then, of course, you move to an election like 2022, where I believe and many people believe that the Republicans are going to do well with Hispanics, and that what that means is that 44-45, I think, could easily translate to 50%. Now, there's another big point that could make that possible. And you got to keep an eye on three districts here in Texas on election night, number 15, number 34, and number 28. All three of them happen to be on the border. Number 15 is a brand new district that was created as part of the redistricting. And most experts believe that Monica de la Cruz will win that as Republican. So that will go Republican. The other two districts are number 34 and number 28. Number 34 is where you have two incumbent representatives running, Myra Flores, who was just elected recently, and Vicente Gonzalez, and those two are running for that seat. So one of them will have to retire from Congress. At the moment, that's too close to call. That's just way too close to call. And the other one is number 28, and that's between Henry Cuellar and Cassie Garcia. Henry Cuellar is a well-known Democrat with strong roots in that district. But all of those two races, number 28, number 34, are too close to call. So if you see on election night Republicans doing well in those districts, that's a good sign that the governor could very well get to 50%. I think he will, because I think overall he's done a good job, but I think overall most Hispanics look at him and they see, a governor who's results oriented, and he's doing a good job. So I expect that he will get to 50%. You know, I saw a story before we started. We're going to talk more about this in upcoming videos, but I saw a story that 12 police officers have already been killed this year. That is a shame. first of all, it's a horrible thing on their families, because when you look at their faces, a lot of them are young people and a lot of them have young families. So it's a terrible human tragedy in that sense. But I think it's unfortunate because it shows the aggressiveness of criminals against the police, something that is made possible, unfortunately, by the lawlessness and some of these DAs who are putting people back on the streets. I was watching a video of the chief deputy of police out of Philadelphia complaining that, you know, we arrest these people on Monday and on Wednesday they're back in the streets, or Tuesday they're back in the streets. I was watching an interview with the president of the police union there in Philadelphia. He was basically saying the same thing, that nobody's protecting the police. You expect the political class and the judges to support the police. Well, apparently they're not, because they're pandering to all of these, you know, left-wing ideas of social justice, and they're killing the police. And we're seeing already 12 officers this year. Look, if you're wondering why a lot of these blue cities are having a problem recruiting police, that's why. Because the police don't feel respected, and they don't get respect from the political class. And that's a shame. That's an absolutely horrible situation. Well, we remember a couple of things on this day in history. First of all, we remember President Eisenhower, who was elected, who was born on this day in 1890. He died in 1969. Eisenhower, of course, you know, here's a little trivia. Eisenhower was born in Denison, Texas, right on the border with the Oklahoma border. He was born there, and then I guess he grew up in, I believe, Kansas. But he was the first, in fact, president born in Texas, not Lyndon Johnson, but it was actually President Eisenhower, although, as I said, he didn't live in Texas for a very long time. Then he went into the Army as a young man and into the 20s and 30s in the Army. And then, of course, in the 1940s, that's when he rose to prominence, when he became the commander of the Allied forces in Europe. He was responsible for D-Day. And after the war, after the Allied victory, he came back to the United States as a victorious general, a very popular man. He came initially, had no interest in politics, but eventually was nominated by the Republicans in 1952. And he was elected in 1952 and in 1956. His presidency was kind of quiet because he was the right personality for the country. After Korea and after World War II, I think the country wanted a little tranquility, and he provided that. But that was his genius. That was his genius as president, understanding that what the country needed was a little time to settle down and come back and start families and grow families. So the 1950s were generally a prosperous time and a good time for the United States. And Eisenhower was just the right president for that time. It doesn't mean the 50s were perfect. They were not. But for the most part, they were a very good time for the United States. And Eisenhower was the face of the 50s, and a good face, in my opinion. He passed away in 1969, about 10 years or so after leaving the White House. And on this day in 1962, here's a little trivia. We're going to talk a little bit more about this in upcoming shows. This was day number one of the Cuban Missile Crisis. This was the day, October 14th, 1962, when the information went to President Kennedy that there were missiles in Cuba. And of course, all of this developed over the next 10 days or so. And then President Kennedy addressed the nation on October 22nd. But this was day one of the Cuban Missile Crisis. Great story. Great story. I was living in Cuba at the time, so I guess I have an interest in it. Thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.